Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Compassionate Capitalist Radio Show. This is Karen Rand, your host. I am a compassionate capitalist in that I spend a great deal of my time and money and energy and efforts in helping entrepreneurs bring innovation to the market and create wealth through their success and the investors that we connect them with and their success in that particular endeavor. And we encourage investors to embrace this economic situation that we're in right now by showing how they can be compassionate capitalists by providing capital to early stage companies in financing contracts or in straight pure equity investments and help them bring that innovation to the market, create the jobs and create the wealth, because that's where we turn this boat around, is really at the grassroots level of helping these entrepreneurs become highly successful. And that leads me to our guest today, Jim DeBetta of DeBetta Enterprises. I'm very excited to have him on my show because he is truly an expert in his field. He's going to tell you a lot more in his own words, but really he's brought leading consumer products to the market. He works with inventors on a daily basis, looking at really exciting projects that are coming to market, the folks that engage him to learn how to get their products to market. So if you're an inventor, if you're any kind of an entrepreneur that's got an idea or any kind of invention that you've been thinking about doing, or you've already brought to market, you're struggling to get it to market, tune in, because over the next 45 minutes or so, you're going to get a wealth of information on all things about inventing and how do you get your product commercialized and highly successful in the marketplace. And he's been doing this for probably 20 years, I guess, and he'll go into his whole background on that. So I'm very excited because, you know, this is part of what we do at LaunchFN. You can go to Launch Funding Network, launchfn.com, and learn all about our access to capital system. And a big piece of what we do in helping companies is knowing those experts in a field that can benefit, that can help a company, and so many times it's something to do with inventing. So wanted to make sure I got this information out into the marketplace for you guys, because I've been working with Jim now for a few months and just constantly amazed at his wealth of knowledge and how much he has his own passion for helping entrepreneurs succeed. So without further ado, welcome Jim. How are you doing today?
Thanks. I'm doing great, thank you. That's quite an introduction. Hopefully, I'll live up to the excitement there.
Well, so tell us, you know, first of all, let's hear your elevator pitch. Tell everybody exactly what you do in your day-to-day world of bringing that million-dollar idea to life with the DeBetta Enterprises.
Well, what I like to do, Karen, is to help people learn how to develop their ideas properly, and then, of course, the ultimate goal is to get them sold, whether that's to retailers or to even corporations through licensing.
Okay. Okay, that'll be – we want to come back and talk about that licensing thing right now in a few minutes, but because that's something that, you know, I know that when I talk with entrepreneurs a lot of times – you know, sometimes the difference between what does it really take to do a whole, you know, manufacture and get it to market and break in and get space on the shelf or, you know, get whatever versus licensing something. So that's a good topic. We'll come back to that. But before we go there, so how long have you, how'd you get started in this space? Were you working for a big company bringing products to market, or how'd you get started?
Well, I mean, basically, I kind of grew up around products. My family, my dad in particular, owned a chain of retail stores on Long Island in New York. And so, like it or not, it's in my blood. I kind of just grew up around the family stores and, you know, going in when I was a little kid, stocking shelves and, you know, just doing whatever I could around there, emptying the garbage, you name it. But I always had a real enjoyment for it. I always loved talking to the customers and trying to sell them things. And, you know, I mean, here I was, like, you know, 13, 14-year-old kid selling, you know, fireplaces and you know, high-end hardware to adults. And it was kind of like a, you know, like a rush for me. So it was a lot of fun. So I definitely have some, I guess, some pedigree from my dad who I have to thank for that. And then when I finished college, I always was very entrepreneurial. I always looked at things and said, how can I create a business around that? But I fell into consumer products in my early 20s, was part of a very successful startup in the sport optics world, the world of binoculars, telescopes, night vision, magnifiers, anything that's sport-related, so to speak. And we grew a nothing company into a company that was doing, you know, got pushing $20 million a year, you know, and became one of the biggest brands in the business. So had some good experiences and some good lessons along the way.
What was the name of that company? Was it Sport Optics? You said it was.
Oh yeah, it was called Carson Optical, and the company's still going strong today. And a lot of the products that we helped to create and put into the store shelves are still selling today. You know, from the Walmarts and Targets and Radio Shacks and Cabela's all the way down to department stores like Dillard's and Macy's and you name it. Our products are still everywhere. So at least I have a little bit of a legacy left. You know, I could show my kids, hey, look, here's what Daddy created, and you can go into stores and actually see the products today.
Okay, super. That's exciting. So when did you so you did, like a lot of entrepreneurs, you used corporate environment as a way to really gather that expertise and that your knowledge base, that you at some point you saw a need in the marketplace yourself, that there was a need for the information you had. And so how did you get started running your own business?
Well, you know, I kind of fell into the inventor space, if you will, by accident. A couple of buddies of mine, after I went on and worked for a large premium incentive corporation, I didn't really enjoy working for a big company where I was just another employee. And so I got a couple of buddies together, one in particular, and a friend of mine down in Texas who used to work with me in the optics business. And we started a business where we would help startup companies with products to help them sell them to retailers. But we found that we were getting a lot of emails and calls from people that were saying they were inventors. Hey, Jim, you know, I've got this idea for a product, or hey, I've got an invention. And we used to get more of those calls and emails than we did from mature companies or companies that were already out there, you know, maybe doing a $500,000 or $1 million in business but needed help selling to the big retailers. So we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, hey, there's something here, and obviously there's a big need. And what we found over the years was that there was a tremendous lack of knowledge by inventors, and rightfully so, simply because most inventors are everyday people. There's no inventing corporate jobs, so to speak, that you grow up knowing about. I mean, there are people that work in big companies that, you know, that are part of R&D, the research and development side. But the reality is that inventors can be teachers. They can be stay-at-home moms or dads. They can be doctors and lawyers. They could be any profession, any age. It doesn't matter. So a lot of those people just don't understand the process. And so I got really intrigued and really wanted to help those people get through the process, kind of like the way I did, and hopefully do it without spending too much money and making the least amount of mistakes along the way.
Absolutely. So So that's great. So now, when you advise companies, what kind of companies are you working with? I know you have like a coaching package where you take your expertise and you help them sort of chart their path of getting a product. So is it mostly consumer products, or is it, you know, other type of inventors that might have, you know, non-consumer business-centric products or engineering products?
Well, I work with people and companies of all sizes. I've worked with companies that are doing tens of millions of dollars that, believe it or not, still need outside expertise on certain channels. So maybe you're a $25 million company and you're used to selling just the big mass merchants like the Walmarts or Kmarts, but you want to sell to the TV shopping channels like Home Shopping Network or QVC, where we used to do a lot of business with and have a lot of great connections. And then we all the way down to individual inventors, which is what I really love, where people contact us and say, Jim, look, I've got a product. I have a prototype. Maybe they have a website, but they don't know what to do. They're confused. They're really nervous because there's a lot of scam companies and, you know, a lot of things in any business, and people don't want to have their money taken but get nothing in return for it. So I developed this coaching consulting program where I can walk inventors through all the steps, make sure they're doing everything right, and then in areas that I'm not an expert in, I point them to the right people so I know that they can go to people they trust. But I typically stay in the consumer products world. That's where my expertise lies. So if you invent something that you can buy at a store on the shelf, that's where I concentrate my time on.
So what? Give us a couple of examples of products that you just sort of you take great pride in the fact that you really helped a company get all the way through it, and we might know of, and we would just be like, wow.
Okay, well, there's a couple of brands that, you know, hopefully a lot of people know. There's a company called Homedics, which is a very big player in the personal massage category. So you get those foot massagers or handheld massagers or even what's popular today, the seat back massagers. You see these everywhere, mm-hmm. in Target, Walmart,
sure.
Bed Bath & Beyond, and you sit on them and, you know, they have those shiatsu rolling balls and they're like $50, $100. We work with their factory, their main factory supplier, and that sells products to Walmart and to Brookstone, and now we've got some nice business going with some big catalogers and other retailers, you know, for this holiday. So that's a pretty big category and brand that a lot of people know. There's another product we work with called Adventure Action Gear, and they make heated fleece clothing. So you can get a heated fleece vest or a jacket or even pants, believe it or not. They're not made of fleece, but they have these little interwoven wires in them, and you basically charge them up. You plug them in like you would charge up your cell phone, and then you have instant warmth for anywhere for 3 to 5 hours. We've launched their products into many major retailers and catalogers, and we have a lot of smaller clients that obviously we're working with right now that have gotten their products into mass merchants, and some of them right now that when we coach, we kind of keep things a little confidential because until they're really out there, they're concerned about their intellectual property, their patent rights, and stuff like that. So, but you know, those alone are some very big brands that we've worked with. And a lot of times we just consult with companies too. But taking an inventor through the process is a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, but ultimately, you know, people with good products and good ideas can make some money with them.
Absolutely. So that's a great story. Now, when people get started and they're first coming to you, give us like maybe even using that as an example and their decision to decide to manufacture and go into market, get into catalogs versus, you know, licensing. We had kind of mentioned that we would talk about that at the beginning of the show. So when should a company make a decision that they should license and go that route versus going and creating a whole product category or product offering and family of products and do the whole infrastructure of taking it to market?
That is a great question, Karen, because I get this question more than just about any other question. And the way to really look at it is you have to look at yourself and what you feel you're capable of and what your goals are. So, Karen, if you called me up and said, Jim, I've got a widget, but look, hey, I'm near retirement or I already have a full-time job and I'm married with kids and my time is tied up and I don't want to start a business. I don't want to hire employees or get a warehouse or have an office space. Then licensing might be for you because with licensing, you're in essence leasing your intellectual property or your patent rights to another company. So your widget we may take your widget and say, hey, Karen, look, you should be calling on, you know, XYZ company that already sells products like this. So like if we use Homedics, for example, if you had a massage product that you invented and you don't want to start a company, it's really smart to say, hey, why not approach Homedics and see if they want to license your product idea. And then what they would do ultimately, if everything worked out well, is they'd pay you a royalty based on how much product is sold and how much profit is earned. So that's typically an easier route because, again, you don't have to start a whole business around it. And hopefully, if the product succeeds, you just earn royalties. A lot of people call it mailbox money. So, you know, every month or every quarter, you're getting a check in the mail based on how much money you've earned from that. If you choose to do what I did, which is, you know, go the whole full-blown thing where you start a business, you get a warehouse space, you find factories, you manufacture the product yourself, you have to create sales and marketing strategies, implement them, set up websites. I mean, I don't have to tell you, Karen, what it's like to set up and start a business. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Right.
You can't do it all yourself, and it takes years to really build it out. And here's the big thing. You need a lot of money to do it. And a lot of people come to me, and they say, Jim, look, I don't have the money. You know, well, okay, well, you know, let's look at your situation. They send me a business plan. Unfortunately, it's usually not robust enough for them to go out and raise money from angel investors, which is your area of expertise. And then they wake up to the reality and they say, hey, well, maybe I should license. But then you get those people that say, you know what? There's a lot more money to be made if I make and sell the products myself versus getting a 5% royalty. So you know what, Jim? I do want to get a business plan developed. I want to learn how to raise money. And then I want to go to market and try to do this myself. And that's a very common scenario. It's what I like, but it's a lot more work, and there's more risk in that as well. So,
yeah, when I advise companies along those lines, a lot of times it depends on two. You mentioned one that it definitely depends on. It's really kind of your resources and your ability to actually build a company piece of that. And so along that same vein, we'll kind of explore what they're sort of how are they willing to give up a bunch? Are they willing to be the guy in the sandbox that invents and they let other people run the company? You know, are they willing to, be a team player, I guess, when it comes to building a company and having to do this stuff? So you have to bring in the people that have that expertise and then follow their advice to do it that way, to manufacture it or whatever. And so it's part of that is, you know, do you have the access to it? And then but the other pieces that we look at is, if they really don't have like a line of products that they're coming out, it's much more difficult for them to raise the capital because it's just one, if it's a consumer product and it's just one product, you know, that's hard to get the attention, it seems to me, of the retailers in some of these spaces and have a growing revenue stream versus, you know, we worked with a company that was really quite clever at one point in time, and it was a thing for taking extended a pole. They had patent this where you could, at the handle down at the bottom of the pole, you could manipulate the gear or whatever it was at the top of the pole. So it's changing light bulbs, doing whatever, raking it, scooping out your gutters. You know, they have different attachments that would go in this pole, but it all just was manipulated down at your hand, you know, at the bottom of the pole. And so the thing that was really great about what they did was that they had all these follow-on packages. So they would also package up another three sets of heads or individual heads. So once somebody bought the pole, they could go buy all different types of things. So there was this, you know, there's always going to be a new type of attachment coming out or the variations of that. So they had like a family of products. So it made no sense for them to license it. Sometimes you get somebody that comes out with something and they've invented something, but they don't really have the means to go and do the full manufacturing, at least not yet. So, you know, license it for one sector of the population or one. Sometimes these big companies don't want to go out and develop a product, so they might license it for you to, you know, and then take that mailbox money and go invent your next thing that's nothing to do with that because you don't have a family of product. Now go invent the one. Now you've got some money to actually do the thing that's the real, you know, game stopper on your next product. Because most inventors, you know, I'm part of the Georgia Inventors Association, and they got a dozen products in their head, you know. Do you find that when you talk with inventors? Do they really, the one they're talking about is like the one that there's most further along, but the one they're passionate about is one that's still in their head?
Well, Karen, I don't know an inventor that just has one idea. I think it's an affliction, and I think it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I envy those people that are so creative that they can look at something in the kitchen and come up with a better way for us to utilize it. I mean, those people are brilliant. And I had people come to me with as many as 50 to 100 inventions. And I say, look, whoa, we gotta slow down. Let's get one idea. Let's take you through the process. So when you do one, whether it succeeds or fails, you'll know what to do the second time and the third time. And then they don't need to reach out to people like me. I'll help them do it right the first time, like anything you learn in life. And then, you know, you're capable of doing it on your own, you know, minus other, you know, parts of running your business. But, you know, to go back to the whole, you know, starting a business or having a one-product company, look, I mean, when we started, we were what was called item-driven, where you only have one product. But if you have an iPod-esque type product, well, you know, you can get away with selling one thing as long as it's really something that connects with a huge audience. There are a lot of people that do that, but it is true that retailers do like to bring on product lines because they want to take up more shelf space. They want to have a vendor for multiple products instead of having, you know, a million vendors for a million products. They'd rather have, you know, just a handful of vendors with a lot of products. I mean, that is usually a commonplace thing in retail. But, you know, no matter what, Karen, no matter what, you need money to invent. I know there are a lot of things out there that you see where, hey, get your product to market for less than, you know, $100, or, hey, you know, learn all you need to learn for free. Nothing in life is free that's really great. I could tell you that right now. Things that you can put, you know, dollars on a product or a service. You have to spend the time. This is a business. Inventing is a business, and it's a serious business, because when you sell products to billion-dollar retailers, you better know that you have the best product with great benefits. You got to have a great package for your product. You got to have a great marketing strategy. You got to have a sales strategy, great websites, great brand, all those things. And you got to have a little bit of a war chest. Now, do you need $1 million in the bank? Absolutely not. I've seen people start companies with a few thousand dollars. But where they excel over other people is their ability to go out and find the money they need. And, you know, again, it's kind of your world, Karen. I mean, people need to learn more and more, and it's a big thing that I see with inventors. They don't know what to do or where to turn to, and that lack of knowledge stops a lot of inventors in their tracks. They're afraid to go forward because they don't have money. They have great ideas, but some of them don't realize that they can tap into their networks and their friends and family and learn techniques that can allow them to raise enough money to get them to market. And then once they're selling some product, then that gives them the cash flow to keep, you know, doing more and more and more.
Yeah. So let's talk about like the part of the going to market, and I don't want to steal all your thunder. Wait, let's take a moment now to tell everybody websites they can go to get a lot more in-depth information about you. I know you've got a blog, but you cover a lot of this. You have a videos that you do. You've got a membership site. So tell folks about that, and then we'll come back to the question I was going to have. But that way they can be getting this information as they're listening. Of course, for folks that have called in late, either we have a number of people that are listening live on the phone, with people listening live through the internet. I'm interviewing, this is Karen Rands, and I'm interviewing Jim DiBetta, an expert at helping inventors take their products to market and commercialize them. So, Jim, tell us your websites where people can get a lot more information.
Absolutely. Well, of course, they can go to jimdebetta.com, J-I-M-D-E, B as in boy, E, T-T-A, jimdebetta.com. And from there, they can obviously learn more about me, some of the services that I offer inventors and small companies. And then from there, they can click on, at the bottom of my homepage, the academyforentrepreneurs.com. So that's www.theacademyforentrepreneurs.com. I know it's a mouthful, but from there, they can go and get literally hundreds of free articles from an array of experts, including you, Karen, about everything from patenting a product to selling it to major retailers and licensing it. And they can see interviews on that site and see events where I'm going to be appearing and where all of our inner circle experts are going to be appearing. And people love the site because, A, it's free. All you have to do is just click on it, sign up. It's a very short form. We don't bother people too much. You know, we'll send you a thank you note. Hey, you know, happy you're here. But that's a place where inventors can really run wild and download as much stuff as they can. And believe me, I get letters all the time from people telling me that They love this site. They're happy that I made it. And they also get access to all the experts on the site, and that gives them even more depth of knowledge of how they can proceed. So those are the two main things. Obviously, you can find me on, I think, just about every social networking site there is, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Plaxo, YouTube, MySpace. I'm pretty much out there. I love answering inventor questions and trying to point them in the right direction all the time.
Yeah. And to find you on Facebook or on Twitter, it's just Jim DeBetta is the easiest way to find you?
Yeah, Jim DeBetta, right, that's exactly it. Jim DeBetta is my Twitter handle. Obviously, Facebook, you know, people just type in the name, they'll find me. And then from there, you can always pick up my blogs and latch on to that. And my blog is also located on my Jim DeBetta website, so people can join in there. I have tons of stuff in there. And I also have a radio show now, Karen, I think you know. With my co-host Ron Reardon, who's a real renowned comedian. And that's on. You could get that from my site as well, from the Academy site, and listen to that on Thursday mornings at 10 o'clock.
Okay, terrific. So, back to some questions. You know, when we have somebody come to us that's really got kind of a consumer type of a product, and you know, we want part of what we advise them on validating the market opportunity a little bit and getting some stats on that before, and it also helps them on the commercialization of going into any kind of retailer, is to make it available via their website and use that fact that people are searching for a product like that and getting some of those stats on how many people are searching or how many get their website getting some activity, because that gives them, you know, fuel to be able to go to investors and say, well, you know, every month there's 10,000 people looking for this product and we've created a pre-launch list because people want this product, whatever it is, but you create sort of this demand for you, show there's demand for your product that kind of validates the opportunity, and that also helps you when you go to retailers. So first thing is, how do you advise, I mean, is that consistent with sort of some of the things that you do, and when do people go from that to doing an infomercial, you know, or is it possible to go straight to retailers? Sort of what's the sequencing of events when somebody's bringing a product to market, a consumer product?
Well, I mean,
and
by the way, I have a great little link on my homepage about a blueprint for inventors, which is the basic steps to inventing. I'll go through them real quick because I think it's pretty simple to me. And just I try to keep it simple for inventors that are new to the business. But basically, the first thing you do is a patent search. You got to make sure that you're not infringing on somebody else's idea, because if you do, obviously the lawyers come out, and you know, there can be a lot of legal trouble there. After you're free and clear, the next thing you want to do is you want to make sure that your product is viable. And how you do that is you either do some focus group work or some online consumer surveys, basically asking your friends and family if your product idea is great is not objective enough. I mean, if they love you, they're going to say, yeah, Karen, you know, I love you. Your product's awesome. I think it's going to do great. But behind closed doors, they may be saying, oh, man, I think she's got something that's not really that good. So you want to reach out to people that don't have an interest in you personally, but they'll tell you objectively, look, your product stinks, it's great, or something in between. So after you go through that process and people have validated your idea and you get a lot of positive feedback, the next thing you want to do is take your product idea and put it in front of a design engineer or a product designer, somebody that can actually take the idea out of your head, you know, get it drawn out, do some more advanced CAD work, which a lot of people are familiar with, which is computer-aided designing of your product. And then you can get a prototype made. And all this doesn't cost a lot of money, but at least what you do is you've made sure that you have the ability to go to market with a product without infringing on someone's patent. You've had it validated by strangers, in essence. You go ahead and have a designer or an engineer look at your product, make sure it can be made correctly and efficiently. You get a prototype, and then, you know, you've got the semblance of something here. Then, of course, while you're doing that, you've got to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go ahead with this. If I'm going to start a company, you got to create a logo and a name for your product and your company, and then get a website and brochures and sell sheets and spec sheets and all those collateral material things you need. And then, of course, you got to think about money. You got to say, well, okay, if I don't have the money to go into business, how am I going to get it? And, of course, that starts with creating a great business plan and preparing to look to raise money. And then you got to start refining this product. You have to find a factory that can make it whether it's in the United States or overseas, get quotes for it. And then once you get a factory lined up, you make sure the product is safe. You get it safety tested and make sure it's safe to meet U.S. demands. You package it up. You come up with some sales and marketing strategies, how you're going to get people to notice it. And then you're basically, you're ready to go to market. Again, that's a general list, but those are the basic steps. And again, they're all outlined on the Jim DeBetta site on the link on the homepage.
Okay. Wow. So, okay, we always get folks, you know, sometimes you get people, they're raising money because they're trying to do a infomercial. When is it a good idea to do an infomercial? Are there certain products that do better with infomercials, or is that a lot of hype?
Well, look, I mean, let's face it, the infomercial business has been around before I was alive and before you were alive. It started out with, like, you know, the old Ginsu knives, slices, it dices, and wait, there's more, and if you do this and you act now, you're going to get that. That stuff's been around for decades, and it works. And now, Karen, we were just talking about this, how I subscribe to DirecTV, and, I mean, there's got to be 7 or 8 dedicated channels that sell products 24 hours a day. I've never seen so much activity in the infomercial world, and obviously people are making money and people are getting wealthy from this. I mean, you guys, and everyone's heard in the industry about Billy Mays and him passing away, but he has a show on Discovery Channel called Pitchman, and it takes you behind the scenes with how they do these infomercials and the actual people and their clients and how they actually help them sell the products on TV. It's a legitimate, strong, humongous business, and if you've got the right product that fits the criteria that they're looking for, typically it's low-priced items, things that are like under $20 or even under $30, things that appeal to the masses, okay? So you see, you know, kitchen products, or you see pet products, or things that, where there's a big audience that they demonstrate well on TV that you can buy right now because it's affordable. That's an avenue potentially for a lot of people, but, you know, there's, you know, things to that too. I mean, you know, you give up a lot of control of the sale of your product to these companies, and you know, they could put your product on TV and you could pay money to have them do that, and it could bomb. Some companies don't charge anything, but then they'll take most of the revenue and profits. And again, it's kind of like similar to a licensing deal where they'll sell it for you and you get a percentage. But that's okay for some people because, again, they don't want to go into business and they'd rather have their products put on TV. And at the very least, it's a great marketing tool. I mean, if you're in front of millions of people, people are going to see your product, hopefully, even if it doesn't do as well as you liked. So it's a real business. It's an avenue potentially for a lot of inventors, and it's becoming more and more popular today.
Yeah, there's I had one company that we work with. That had great success in tow truck and is tow truck in a box, and they won Automotive Product of the Year. They've just gone on and become wildly successful. And they started out doing infomercial and fulfillment, and then doing the trade show route, and then they started to get picked up by retailers. And but they said what they learned in the infomercial route is that it has to be something that it's like, you know, there's a price point. There's only so much that people will pay when it comes to that kind of infomercial. And it's best if you've got something that can be sold bundled, like the whole buy two and get thing, or you can add something to it. You have add-on products. And if you order now, you get, you know, car wash too, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So in their case, the product is a really simple product that it's basically two plates that fit in a box. That's why it's called tow truck in a box, and they're rigid and with ridges on them, so that when you put them together, you can put them under any tire and get out of any stuck situation, regardless of what you're stuck in. You can get out of it, guaranteed. And so most people have two cars, so in their case, they sold, or they have a daughter or a spouse or a mother or somebody that would want, you know, most households have two cars, or they know somebody else that they would buy it for. So, you know, instead of, it was $19.95 a month, I don't know these exact prices, but it was $19.95, but buy two for $29.95, you know,
right,
for two of them for that, right? Not a month, but one time thing. you know, and we'll also throw in a keychain, you know, or something, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a gimmick kind of a thing, but that's what gets people to want to buy it, you know, at that time. And so
when people come
through you and they talk about that, you probably have in your inner circle people that do infomercials, or do you advise them on when it's the right time or when they should or shouldn't do an infomercial kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, it is exciting to think about, you know, having your product on TV because people, it's visible, people see it, and obviously people are making money. But again, sometimes it's not appropriate. And sometimes contractually, when you work with infomercial companies, you know, they could potentially tie your product up in their world, and that could be good. But also it could be, you know, an issue if you want to go out and market your own product simultaneously. So, I mean, they do it for their reasons, and it makes sense when you think about them wanting to have an opportunity to market your product their way, because they're investing a lot of money on the TV spot to do it. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you can do it in the beginning. Sometimes you can do it after your product's already been established. But I definitely will always look at somebody's situation and say, look, you know, I don't think this is for you based on your product or your price point of your product, or, hey, I just don't think this is, you know, the right time to get involved here. So, you know, every situation seems to be different, but there are definitely some people I work with that I've said, I think you need to be looking at this area for sure.
Okay, so what would you say is the most common mistake that you see entrepreneurs make when they're first coming to market with an invention?
Most common mistakes, I would say lack of knowledge. A lot of inventors go out, they spend a lot of money getting prototypes done, and a lot, believe it or not, even go overseas, somehow find factories, have product made, and spend thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars bringing the product into their home. They park it in their basement, and then they don't know what to do with it. That's a huge, huge common mistake, just not understanding the process of, you know, step one, here's what you do, step two, what's next. They get excited, and again, rightfully so. There's a lot of money to be made in this business, but a lot of people don't know the steps, or they hear them, and they try to skip them. So they try to rush through everything, and then, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them get burned along the way. Another issue is not knowing what their goals are. They don't know what licensing is, and they don't know what it's like to sell to retailers with their own business. So not understanding the business side of inventing is a big problem, and the risks that are involved. Another thing is lack of money, or a lack of understanding of how to get money. Now, obviously, Karen, you and I both know that not every project's going to be able to raise the money that people need. You know, investors are very fickle, and they want to see, you know, great business plans with great money-making opportunities. I always tell people, look, people that invest in your business are interested in making money. I mean, they may like you, they may think you're a great person, and they may like your product, but if they don't see, you know, X percent return on their investment, you know, they're going to go on to something else. It's a business. So either not being prepared financially or thinking that it costs less than it actually does is a huge, huge mistake. And then the other thing is not looking to people like myself that have been in the business that can point them in the right direction with the right service providers. Again, you could do so many things yourself, but when you're not familiar with, you know, writing a patent application, you should seek advice. It's no different than going to the doctor when you're sick, or, you know, seeking the advice of attorney if you've got a legal issue. You use professionals. People in this business are professionals, just like those guys are and girls are. So, you know, those are the real basic issues, and unrealistic expectations. You know, every inventor that I talk to seems to think that, you know, that their product could make tons of money. It's okay just to make six figures with your product, or just to make a clean million, you know, over time. But most people don't make that kind of money. Most people, you know, maybe they make five figures or six figures over time. But that's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But just people thinking that, hey, you know, my product, I'm going to put it on TV and I'm going to make millions of dollars like that guy, that's not common. So the more you prepare yourself and educate yourself on the process and find the right team of people to work with, that gives you the best shot at having success.
Yeah, that's absolutely. So I think we find that a lot. You know, people, I did a blog not too long ago and an interview with somebody about the 10 things that show that an entrepreneur is an amateur. And one of the big ones was not knowing what they don't know, and so therefore not trying to figure it out, right? They don't know what they don't know, and they assume they know it because they don't know what they don't know. Okay?
Yeah,
And then you know, then when it comes to the time of realizing I don't know, because you can go file your own patent, but the reason why majority of people don't is because they don't know what they don't know, and they're going to either not follow right or get bogged down and stuff. That's why you hire a professional. So whether it's like with us, you know, going out and teaching people how to raise capital and helping them get access to the capital and qualify for different kinds of things, that's an expertise that most people don't know. They're not born with that. When it comes to taking a product to market, an invention, going to market, and, you know, you just don't know what you don't know, and that's why they hire professionals such as you.
So that's what we see a lot of. Karen, it's so funny because it unfortunately sounds very self-serving. Like, hey, you know, We're service providers, so of course we're always going to tell inventors that they should use our services. But the reality, again, and this is time-tested and proven over and over again, I mean, there are just so many people that decide to try to do everything on their own without the right knowledge or skills, and they blow their life savings. I see this constantly. There's nothing wrong with seeking the advice. That doesn't mean that they've got to pay everybody to do everything. In fact, part of what my coaching and consulting program is I try to teach people to do certain things on their own and how to save money with service providers. So in other words, yeah, you're going to spend some money, but let me show you how to spend the least amount of money to get the best result and to give you the best shot at having success. So look, I use service providers in my business. You know, when I have my computer breaks down, you think I'm going to sit here for 2 days trying to fix it myself? I'll make it worse. I call up an IT guy, I call it my computer guy, and he comes over and he fixes it. It allows me to focus on what I do best. You know, if I need financial advice, I want to raise money, hey, I'll call Karen Rands. I mean, why am I going to, you know, play around in an area that I don't have great skills in? So like anybody else in any other facet of your life, if you're not familiar or skilled in an area, it's actually detrimental to you know, go ahead and try to do it yourself because you'll spend more money doing it wrong than you would if you did it right. So
we had advertised to folks that they would be able to ask some questions, and we do have somebody that has raised his hand to ask, actually two folks. I think it's press one or something if you want to be acknowledged to ask a question. Is it all right if I open up the phone lines and take these callers' questions for you, Jim?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's always fun when you do this. You never quite know what's going to happen, but okay. So, caller, here's how it works. I'm going to name the last four digits of your phone number and say, hey, you're welcome, you're live on the air, and you say your name and your company name, and in this case, if you've got an invention, briefly describe what your invention is, and then not to, you know, disclose anything because this is a public forum that you wouldn't want to be disclosed, but and then you can ask your question. So the first caller is, last four digits is 6669. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Karen. It's Dennis at Vault-X. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Dennis. Now, but see, now you could be on here talking about how to take a product to market because you have done both the manufacturing and the licensing side of things, and you are extremely successful. So I can't wait to hear what kind of – well, I stole your thunder. Tell everybody what your product is and then ask your question.
Oh, yeah. You know, we've developed computer security products. We've developed products to secure the desktop server computers. It's a plug-in hardware device that will replace the antivirus and anti-spyware in systems that don't work. So today we have the antivirus, anti-spyware software practically useless in systems. Just doesn't work. So we're looking to we've developed the products. One of the fortunate things now, Karen, is, you know, yes, we've come a long way. And we've just got this, you know, another $1 million coming in, investors putting in $1 million to allow us to launch. But one of the things is, you know, even though we've been quite successful in developing the products, test marketing the products, you know, and in fact, we have a whole series of products ready to come to market, including we're developing our own cyber secure notebooks to come out in October. But we always look for the expertise. So when we're looking at, you know, just... somehow got onto your site today and said, wow, you're talking to Jim DeBetta, and this is a topic that I'm really interested in, because one of the strategies for us is to bring the product to the consumer markets via Best Buy and Walmart, in particular Best Buy. And so my question for Jim was, what are the key things in dealing with a company like, a company like Best Buy? Of course, they've got a tremendous presence. They've got something like 1,057 stores in the U.S. and 2,400 stores internationally. So when you're dealing with this company, is there some key points to be aware of?
Well, I think the great question, obviously, and a common one. When you go to these, these large, multi-store billion-dollar retailers, I mean, first of all, these buyers are extremely busy, and they get, hundreds of calls and emails a month from everybody trying to sell them whatever. And, of course, you're proud. You've got a great product. You feel it's what they need. But what retailers really care about is what's in it for them. I mean, and it's sad to say that, and it's not a bad thing to say. They don't want to necessarily hear your story. They don't want to hear the origins of your product as much. What they want to learn is, okay, how much money can I earn from your product, and why should it be on the shelves, and can you prove to me that people may want your product? So, if you approach them, you want to say, listen, here are the clear benefits. Here is why my product is going to be in demand. It's going to be in demand because when it comes to computers, our product solves or fixes this problem, and there are 50 million desktop computers in the country, so the market is big. I mean, they'll know the market research, but you also have to talk dollars and cents with them. Typically, major retailers like to work on very high margins. Now, those margins differ depending on the category. Now, when you get into consumer electronics, maybe they're only going to need 20 to 30 margin points, on a hard good electronic product, let's say the actual laptop. But when they sell software, that's where they make their money. So maybe they want to get 50, 60, 70 margin points. So you have to be ready to talk about, the dollars and cents of it. You have to demonstrate to them that they can make money with your product and that you could also make money so you have a sustainable business when you approach them. And when you approach them, what I do for my clients is, knowing some of these buyers, I send them a one-page sell sheet, and it's very simple. It's got a summary on the top. Here's what the product is in very clear, simple language. You have to assume that not everyone's going to understand your product like you do. With the key, then have some bullet points underneath here, the key benefits. Okay, it solves this problem. It helps this. It reduces that, whatever your benefits are. And then at the bottom, just have your contact information. And what I do is I usually request that after they read the sell sheet, that we can get them a sample of the product so they can try it. And, that doesn't always work, but you have to be persistent. Again, these buyers get lots of calls, so you have to kind of stay on them. Sometimes it takes weeks or even months to get a hold of them. But letting them know that you understand their customer, showing them that they can make money, and then showing them your product and it's got clear benefits is usually the basic steps to getting in front of them. And also make sure that you have a great website and great, collateral materials, because buyers are going to go on and they're going to look. They're going to make sure that you look like a real company, that you're a sustainable company.
That's great advice, and in fact, I'll be, looking forward to talking to you offline more about this and getting some assistance in moving forward in there. Because, Karen, there's certain things we realize that we're experts at, and we always look to surround ourselves with people that know more than we do in certain areas. And certainly that's great advice. For us with certainly Best Buy is a particular target for us, and they do have this Geek Squad where they have 20,000 people working fixing computers. So it's a great target for us, and expect Walmart is expanding as well their electronic chains. So good. So I look forward to speaking to you offline, and the show has been very helpful. And Karen, hope to see you soon.
Yes, and we need to. I think we have some other things that you and I are supposed to talk about as of late with your update. I think I'll talk to you about that offline as well.
Sure, it's just, it's tough to raise money, but we just got kind of lucky recently. We kept persisting at it. And
you do the things that you're supposed to do. You follow up and you keep people in aware of what your progress is, and your progress has been quite impressive. And so now that we get you plugged into the system to connect you with those other angel groups, I'm optimistic we'll have some additional good news for you.
Okay, good. Look forward to it.
Hey, thanks
Take
for
care.
Calling in.
Right.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
it.
Okay. Right. Okay. Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
You got
right.
it.
Terrific. Dennis from Vault-X. Okay, the next caller we have up is last four digits are 6843. 6843. I think your caller, you're on the air. 6843? Oh, I took him off again.
Lost
Hold on. There we go. Let me see. It keeps it's a little slow. I click my mouse button too many times. Let me try it one more time. Unmute him. Hey, okay, 6843, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey, Karen, this is Diane Friday of Diane's Mortgage Insurance Refund Service.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jim.
Hi,
I
how
saw
are you?
I got the information that you were going to be on the show today, and I saw some of your video. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. And you were discussing about the retailers, but if someone wants to franchise their business, this is for both of you. Which way would would be the best route to do that?
Well, if you have a business that now is this a product based business or is it a like a storefront type of business?
It will be a service type.
A service type. Well, you know certainly I know a couple of franchise experts, so certainly can always offline suggest a couple people to you. But you know when you get into franchising, in my experiences, and I've actually owned a couple of franchise businesses, so this is where my experience comes in here. They can there's a lot of legal stuff that always has to be considered, and the laws in the United States are pretty clear about, what you can promise potential franchisees in terms of what they can get out of the business. There's a thing called the UFOC, and that's basically the Bible of franchising. So in other words, when you create a franchise, you have to create this book, in essence, and that outlines everything about your franchise, all the rules and regulations, the procedures for franchisees to follow. And I can only tell you that, at the very least, this is, if you're going to franchise a business, you definitely want to get with a franchise attorney, somebody that's very
okay.
accustomed to handling the legal side, because I'm telling you, it's unlike a business where, hey, I want to, invent a product and just go to market. I mean, you set up an LLC or an S-Corp or a basic corporation, you're okay, more or less. But when it comes to franchising, what you want to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, is sell your concept to other people who will then sell whatever that service is, correct?
Yes.
So if that's the case, what happens go ahead.
I keep hearing that reminder. But this will create jobs and job opportunities and business opportunities. And there wouldn't be the franchises wouldn't have to sell it.
Okay. All right. Well, then this might be a greater discussion, but franchising really by nature is the act of basically taking a concept and then replicating it. No different than like think of a McDonald's or H&R for tax services. Okay. So, but no matter where you are in the country, you go to McDonald's. You always know what you're going to get, right? And that's because there are guidelines set out by the franchisor, which is McDonald's Corporation, and then individual people can buy a McDonald's store and run it, but they have to run it by this manual. So it's like this huge manual, but everything in that manual has to be carefully spelled out, and franchise attorneys are really the best people to give you guidance on how you should set up your model so you don't get into a lot of legal hot water.
Okay. So
I'll add to that that on the investor side, because typically we see companies that will come and try to raise private equity capital because they're going to go franchise their business. So, they need to pay for the $150,000 legal fees it's going to cost and have it franchised in all 50 states or something, right? So what you have to do is you have to look at it, and sometimes people, because of that cost, will only franchise, make it live available in the state they're in now or a couple of surrounding states and start on a regional basis. But before individual investors will get involved in that, or that we call business angels that don't know you before now, you know, they're going to want to see that you are able to run at least two of your businesses on your own without you killing yourself, so that you created adequate systems that you could make money, be profitable, step away from them and be making money. Now you're going to take that cookie cutter approach to that particular business and take it all over the place and have a great, you have to have two types of marketing strategies. You have to have the one that markets it to the people that will buy the franchises and all of the reasons why they would want to buy it compared to other things. And your competition in that space oftentimes isn't what you think it's going to be. It's not just because it's another mortgage business. It could be a tax business. It could be any kind of service-oriented business that somebody can buy for your price point. Okay, so you need to think about it from that standpoint, and then also what's the marketing strategy to drive their end-user customers in the door so your franchisees are successful. You got to have, you know, it's a little bit more complicated of a business plan because you really are, you have two, you have a big C customer and a little C customer. So,
yeah.
But those are, and that's what they're, we've had people that come to us that want to get money for franchising and they're just getting their first one started, and it'll never happen until they can show that the model works and is profitable with at least two locations.
That's right. And people won't want to buy, and people won't want to necessarily buy into it if you can't demonstrate that it's already a successful model. So hopefully that helps somewhat. Just seek the advice of a franchise attorney. I'm telling you, that's the best way to get a handle on what legally you need to do to get things kind of organized.
Okay. Well, see, the reason I asked that question, it deals with people who are entitled to a refund from the government. And these people do not know that they are entitled to this money. And if I franchise it, it would get noticed by all the people nationwide. And because the people up in Washington, D.C., just sit there and just hope that the property owners don't know about their refund. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there are,
well, that might there might be a better way to go to market if you're trying to get national exposure on that than incurring the cost of franchising or something. But that's something we could talk to you more offline. If you go to the LaungeFN.com website and register there for under the Get Started tab for an initial, you know, call, we can talk about how you can get that to market and make some money at that. And of course, Jim's got his coaching products for as well. So,
okay, Kara. Thanks.
Right, great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, our next caller is extension 4184. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Karen. This is Jerry Hickman, 911 Locator Systems.
Hey, Jerry Hickman.
How are you?
I just saw, I'm doing great. I just saw, and I think when I had, when we were at the last show that you participated in, I had not mentioned Jim to you then, but I also saw you just did a big announcement on, I saw you got your email announcement of some good things that are happening. So tell folks what your product is and go ahead. It's real interesting. Go ahead and ask your question.
The product, I'm a paramedic with an idea and a product. It's a 911 locator system, plugs into the phone. As soon as you dial 911, it activates a high-intensity strobe in front of your house. That way fire, police,
really?
And EMS can find you a lot quicker.
Cool.
It's been patented, trademarked, copyright, UL listed, FCC approved, CSA approved. We're into production. In January, I just tripled the size of the business, and we've been out raising capital. My question is, I just participated in the Governor's Entrepreneur Conference and won first place as the emerging technology business in Delaware at the time.
Congratulations. Great.
I have AstraZeneca wants to put my product on their website. I also have interest in Lifeline. They want to be a nationwide distributor. I have also been contacted by Turtle and Hughes. They are a large electronic and electrical distributor. They have locations in 39 states. I have the product out running now. Would it be more beneficial to license it as a separate product, you know, just change the color of it, design, the name of it, instead of trying to compete with myself?
Well, you know, that's a common question too. So, and again, without knowing, you know, all of the details, you know, I'll just give you the best general answer I can. When I was in my own company, we were already selling products successfully out in the market, and we found that we had a lot more leverage by then trying to strike licensing deals, because one of the big problems you have as a potential licensor, okay, you've got this great product, and by the way, I think that's great because that's always a big fear, you know, that, okay, you call 911, but then they're driving up and down your street, it's pitch black, they can't find you, you know, what good is a response time if they can't get into your house? But,
exactly.
You know, if
and
you have
a product out.
Yeah, and I think that's a wonderful thing. But if you just go, let's say you have no sales, okay, you have this product, you've got the patents, trademarks,
I have sales, I have 9 dealers, I have 30 more in the process.
Right.
And
okay,
no,
I was just
I don't want the big box
right.
stores, so to speak,
right.
compete against my dealers.
Well, look, that's, you know, ultimately that's going to be a decision you're going to have to make. But the point I was trying to make was that a lot of people come to me and they say, well, Jim, you know, I've got a patent and I want to try to, you know, with a product and I want to try to go get it licensed. And I tell them sometimes it's hard because the licensee, the person who's going to, you know, basically take the product and run with it from you, you know, is taking a lot of risk because there is no success track. In your case, you've already got a success track being built. You're selling it to dealers. But if you want to go to the Home Depots or the, you know, the big retail chains and try to sell your product, for example, look, I've sold the mom and pops, if you will, distributors and the major chains all at the same time. I do it for a lot of my clients. But sometimes it's about branding. You know, some people, like, you know, if you have a high-end, you know, a $300 piece of luggage, you don't want to sell that necessarily in Walmart because you're going to upset the Neiman Marcuses of the world. So, but your product seems to be very universal. I mean, it goes across all, you know, ages, races, you know, financial means. It doesn't matter. It's a life, potentially life-saving product. And I don't see any reason why you can't sell to the big box stores and then sell to dealers as long as you're, you know, cognizant of the fact that you could offend one or the other, and chances are you're going to offend the dealers, the small guys, because, you know, they usually have to sell it for more money, right? And
well,
you're going to charge, you may charge them more because they're not buying as many.
The biggest thing with them is they can offer installation and stuff, whereas the box stores won't.
Well, then there you go, and
their little niche.
That's a perfect example. When I was growing up, and if you listen to the call from the beginning, my dad owned these hardware stores, and what he did was when Home Depot came out, he would install the products that they sold so he could charge more and kind of build that price up because he installed it. And that formula worked great for my dad. He grew tremendously during the 80s and 90s when, you know, the Home Depots and Lowe's were popping up. His business actually grew as an independent because he offered those personalized services. So that could be your point of differentiation in how you make the big guys happy and you make the little guys happy. Absolutely,
yeah,
that's a good point.
That's one of the things I didn't want to do is alienate my little dealers because
yeah.
they helped
build you.
They helped
yeah.
in the beginning.
Yeah, it's a tough walk. You know, maybe there might be a point where you have to, you know, you may have to alienate somebody. But you know, most people ultimately want to go to the big stores because that's where the volume is and where the money is. And you know, ultimately you have to be creative and try to find ways to satisfy them or make another type of product that's similar that maybe has more features and bells and whistles for the independent dealers and make a scaled down version.
That's what I'm working on. I have another product getting ready to roll out. It's a temperature sensor, and what it does at 45 degrees, it calls you and tells you, you know, the temperature, the monitored location is below, you know, the set.
Cool.
So that way your pipes don't freeze and bust for, like, vacation or resort problems.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
And also at 85 degrees, it calls you and tells you. That way you don't come home at 6 or 7 o'clock at night and your AC's been off all day, and then you have to call a AC HVAC guy to pay him overtime to get your air conditioning.
Right.
I'm also going to put in a next-of-kin notification, so when my mom pushes her medic alert, it can call whoever's programmed in stuff like that, so that way
right.
Mom doesn't have to worry about calling her daughter or son or whatever. And see,
very good.
Some of the features maybe that I can't put in, I won't put in on the box stores that I could with the niche market, so to speak.
Well, it sounds like you're on to some really cool things. I love it. So I have no doubt you'll.
But I was wondering what your thoughts were on that licensing thing, because you know I don't want to alienate the people that helped me get rolling.
Yeah, I know. Again, I don't know enough. It might be something you may want to just chat with me about, because I have more questions, and certainly I don't want to kill Karen's day here on this call. But you can get in touch with me offline. I can see if there's ways I can answer you very specifically. Once I know, because there's just too many more questions I have to really get a better sense of what you're doing.
Okay. Alrighty. Thank you.
Hey, you got it.
All right.
Thanks for calling in, Jerry.
All right. Thank you, Karen. Have a good.
Okay.
Happy
have a great 4th
of July.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
All right. So as we begin to, that's all the ones that we have with little hands raised. If anybody else wants to ask a question, just I think you press number 1 or something like that, and it will. You can ask a question. The call-in number is 347-945-6873. But we just got a few more minutes as we're wrapping up here. Any final comments that you'd like to make here, Jim? What's the golden nugget you want all those incredibly creative inventors out there in cyberland and anybody that might listen to this later on? What's the golden nugget you want them to take away? Your best piece of advice you can give an inventor that will change their life?
Well, I just think that the big takeaway is get educated. Learn everything you can about the business, the process of how to do it right, and I'm telling you firsthand, that will give you a much better shot at being successful, learning what you need to know about this business. That's always my best and biggest takeaway. Gives you your best opportunity.
Okay. Yep. Education is very, very critical to all of that. We say that when it comes to companies raising capital as well. And that goes back to that not knowing what you don't know. And I'm constantly amazed every day at what I don't know.
Look, I'm learning too. I learn every day. I learn from everybody I can so I can help everybody I want to help the best possible way. So ongoing education. And having people help you is a good thing, even if you have to pay a few bucks to get it done. But this has been great, Karen. I hope that everyone's gotten a lot out of this, and certainly, hopefully, they'll know how to reach me now. And look forward to lots of fun times here, and with the economy bouncing back, I think we're going to have a great year next year as well.
Yeah. Okay, and then you've got a couple of events coming up or things that you're doing. There's some things going on in August, and then you got something going on in October. You want to tell folks about things that you got going on coming up?
Yeah, I got an event on October 16th and 17th down in Miami. It's a big event with a lot of big personalities in the invention service business, but we're going to teach inventors from soup to nuts how to get things done. Again, that's on my website. It's listed there. And we're working on a couple of other things as well. I think we're going to release more details for all of our events, and they're on the Academy for Entrepreneurs site. There's an event calendar, and people can click on. And from interviews to teleseminars to webinars to live events, please go to the site, theacademyforentrepreneurs.com. Go to the calendar, and not only for my events, but anybody that is involved with the website, anything that they're doing, their events will be listed there as well.
Okay, so good. Great. I know that I'm looking forward to being a part of that event and sharing my expertise with folks as one of the speakers as part of that. So that's great. For our sake, for any of those people that are out there listening right now, of course, we have our next Angel Investor event is on August 12th. And so if you're a company seeking capital, then please go and apply on the launchfn.com website. And we'll see you if as appropriate, we'll get you in front of those sources of capital. And it looks like we got somebody that just got under the wire to ask a question, raising their hand in here. So we'll go ahead and let them come live. It's caller 1151. You're on the air.
Hi, Karen. It's Cindy with the Green Tap, and I joined.
Hi, Cindy. I was just reading your email about your visit to New York. So very good. Welcome to the show. Exciting little product that Cindy has. Tell everybody about your product.
The Green Tap is a portable light dimmer for use in the decorative lighting space without any switches or electronics. It dims your lights 50% and saves you 67% of the energy. Just a little handheld palm-size adapter that you plug in your socket anywhere, and it dims your lights.
Nice.
Yeah. So my question was, Jim, I joined in progress, and I think you just said it quickly, but what is your website?
I have a couple of them. JimDeBetta.com, JimDeBetta, JimDeBetta.com. And when you're there, you can access the Academy for Entrepreneurs website, which is the free site with all the great articles and interviews and downloads, and it's all free. So definitely check it out, and any questions from there, there's an Ask Jim question page on my Jim the Better site. So if you have a question, I could always answer it via email for you. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. I saw your Twitter just a few minutes ago and joined in progress. So Twitter
okay.
Works.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's social networking. You got to love it. You got to love all these websites. It's crazy how
I had put the Twitter thing out. Blog Talk Radio has a thing where you can push a button and it'll announce out to Twitter or your Twitter account if you're on the air. So whenever I'm on the air, I do that. So good, it worked. So good. Thanks for calling in, Cindy. And do you have any other questions for Jim besides his website?
Nope, that's it. I'm looking forward to hearing the replay so I get it all.
Okay, all right, terrific. Thanks for calling in.
Have a good holiday.
Okay, so as we wrap up, again, it's JimDeBetta.com. He has the links to all his other things there. He's also available on Twitter and Facebook at doing a search on Jim DeBetta. And I know he sends out these great little video messages, little tips of the day, and he's going to be a part. He's our second guest speaker on when the Entrepreneur Club Online goes live, to be able to ask the experts. So we'll be doing another session where you'll be able to just, everybody will call in and ask the experts. So that Entrepreneur Club Online is going live this week. So folks, entrepreneurs out there will be able to join in on that and get ongoing information about raising capital and these experts such as Jim on getting your product and your company to market. So thanks again, Jim, for calling in and being a part of the show.
Thank
Any
you.
It's
great. I had a lot of fun. I look forward to, to helping inventors and helping them in all facets of the business and just having a great year and seeing some more success stories out there. Love it. Just absolutely love this business. So.
Well, we're excited to be working with you, and your passion comes through loud and clear.
Good. Hopefully, man. I think we're an hour and 15 minutes. Hopefully, people aren't falling asleep on us, but. This is important stuff, and it's people's monies and it's their dreams, and we want to make sure we take care of them the right way. So I think it's worth the time, for sure.
Absolutely. So great. So have a great 4th of July. It's Independence Weekend. This is it for entrepreneurs. You are forging ahead. You're the blaze. You're the trailblazer for independence, for your financial independence. So exciting weekend on many different levels. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening to the Compassionate Capitalist Radio Show. Again, this is Karen Rand. I've been interviewing Jim DeBetta, the leading consumer products business advisor to inventors and entrepreneurs. And next week we will be interviewing an entrepreneur that has been successful in taking a product to market, an inventor that's got a consumer product, did the infomercial route, raised capital, did that whole nine yards, recently written a book, John Hobbs' Athlete Oasis will be our guest speaker next week, so please make plans to tune in during your lunch hour. Eat your little tuna fish sandwich or the peanut butter and jelly while you listen in at blogtalkradio.com, Karen-Rand. So thanks again, Jim, and
hey,
it's jimdebetta.com, and we'll be talking to you soon.
You got it. Have a great holiday, Karen, as well.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.